Hey guys, welcome to episode 119 of the JV Club with my special guests, Paul and Storm. Always exciting to have a pair in, and we actually are recording at the Nerd Melt podcast studio because for one change, I'm going to allow them to have each their own microphone, so that's very exciting. Big stuff happening at the JV Club, guys. Big technological stuff happening. I am just going to throw out some shout-outs and keep it simple on this episode intro because I have so many shout-outs to catch up on, but I do want to remind people that they can check out You're the Worst on Thursdays at 10:30 and new episodes of Korra on Fridays at 7, FX and Nickelodeon, respectively. And very excited about Comic-Con. I'm doing a million things there, including Thrilling Adventure Hour, Night Vale crossover, panels, podcast panels for Nerdist, and a Korra panel on signing, and possibly some stuff I'm forgetting. As far as shout-outs go, I want to thank for their Nerdist comments, Sydney, PJ, Todd, Grimm, Lala Bandy Pants, always fun to say that, and Stell. And Stell, you had a really interesting point about Paul Gilmartin's episode, and I'm going to get back to you that via Nerdist on that, but thanks for your comment. PJ, Hannah, Scott, Tress, Sydney, and Joseph, thank you for your Facebook comments. Same with Allie, who I met at Connecticon, and Christian. Kelly, for your suggestion on a Boys of Summer possibility. I'm working on it. Alexander and Brooke and Stephanie, for your Facebook comments. And then for your personal emails, God, I got so many great ones, guys. I just wanted to shout out Alana, Caitlin, Charles, Kat, Charles, I just said, Delani, Stephen, Greg, Laura, Nina, Doug. Thank you guys so much. I really, really appreciate the kind and wonderful things you've said on these emails. And that's it. I'm going to get right into the episode. And I wish you guys a very nice week. Thanks.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
We're really here for you. We are here for you.
You could really shit the bed.
That's not an assurance or any sort of encouragement when we say we are here for you.
You're just literally...
We're here.
Yeah, we're here. Yeah,
we are here,
and we're here for you.
Doesn't feel supportive at all.
No. We will probably laugh at you.
Good.
That's
good.
Sort of kind of our thing, but okay. People like it.
I plan to pretty much be monosyllabic and unhelpful.
Okay.
I'm going to totally Billy Bob Thornton this shit.
Oh my God, I finally heard that interview. Are levels okay, Aristotle?
It's amazing.
Okay. I finally heard it. I didn't...
Oh yeah, it's really...
I hadn't heard it. And...
It's really something.
It really made me wish I could unhear it.
Yeah.
Because I do enjoy him so much.
Yeah.
And
to
it
be
made
fair,
me want to shoot him in the face.
The host, Gian, is a bit of an instigator. So
yeah.
Even though he did only say, mentioned the fact that he is Billy Bob Thornton, the actor,
yeah.
That's pretty clear with his PR people that, like, it's a fiction, sure. It's kind of hard to ignore that.
Yeah.
And he just would not ignore that.
Yeah. So he really was coached, specific. It's so hard, though.
My understanding of it is he said he wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah.
And Gian just brought it up in a introduction of him. And just the fact that he mentioned it at all really
set him off.
Set off Billy Bob Thornton. And I get the sense that it doesn't take a lot to set Billy Bob Thornton off.
Probably very right. Well, why don't we just ask him? Now, Billy Bob, that'd be amazing, amazing, subtle intro of someone.
Yeah. That's right. It is It is Tuesday, so Billy Bob's getting the new round of comics.
That's
well, the
right.
Most uncomfortable part was his side men during that interview.
Oh,
when
yeah,
they
because
try
they
to
just
come
seem
in.
Like nice guys who are like super. That's the problem. Are we recording, by the way? I have no official beginning, so I'll just start this somewhere, wherever I goddamn well feel like it. But yeah, it's so hard when someone is trying to, like, you sort of feel like they're both jerks, and then the only nice people are the band because you feel so much sympathy for them, just being like,
Would you ask Tom Petty that question?
Well, yeah, if he suddenly started acting,
yeah
I would ask him if acting was his first love.
I know. But you get it. You sort of get Like, I mean, yeah, I just identify enough with him to almost be okay with it, but then, like, the way that he deals with it is the opposite of what I feel
so maybe
doing.
The career that you have isn't the one that you imagine your identity to be.
Right.
But the fact is, you've been successful with that, and you shouldn't just suddenly try to
Yeah, and maybe pitching a fit like a 5-year-old is not the best way to deal with that situation. Yeah.
Not for most things. There are some things, but very few.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that we would sort of start out our conversation this way because, of course, you guys, one of the most successful paper doll manufacturers in the country. Everyone knew you for your paper dolls.
We said before we started this interview that we were not going to be discussing the paper doll company.
I understand that, but from my perspective and from our listeners' perspective, you know, I would say 99% of my listeners are paper doll enthusiasts. So they know you
as... So our music is about love.
Now, listen,
it is about love and
Janet, I actually think that's kind of a stupid question, Janet, and I think you're stupid for asking it. And can we just please stick to talking about Rampart?
Am I talking to music, Paul, right now, or am I talking to paper doll, Paul? I don't even No.
Now, when I pick up my guitar, I am thinking about only guitar and nothing else. I can't even think of anything else I might be thinking about. I'm only thinking about guitars.
That's very zen.
Yeah, it's a zen thing. It's completely zen.
Did you ever read Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance?
I didn't. I had the book sitting on my bookshelf. My brother read it, and I borrowed it from him, and it sat on my bookshelf literally for 10 years.
Yeah.
It was, you know, the shelf of books that you... should read
oh,
and should
yes,
get around to.
Yes,
there's plenty of those.
Yes.
Like the I've never read I've read like the first 3 chapters of the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah.
And I've never made it past that.
I don't even know if I got that far.
Yeah. The thing is it's not a good book. I'm just gonna go ahead and say Lord of the Rings is not a good book. It's a great story.
I just lost 50% of my life.
It's a great story, but it is not a great book.
Yeah.
It's not a compelling
book.
But
did that mean that you've read all of them?
I don't even remember.
Yeah.
That's how poor a book it is.
I feel like there are so many books like that that are sort of in the canon of books you can have enough conversations about that perhaps you know. Like I don't think I ever read Moby Dick, but I feel like I refer to it as if
mm-hmm.
I mean it was very Moby Dick esque.
Yeah, very Melville. Very very Melville.
Yeah, we all have our white whale. Never read it. I don't know. I get a vague idea that it might be about searching for something.
Actually, I think it's about penises.
Oh,
whale penises.
Well. Whale-like penises.
Metaphorical whale penises.
And literal whale penises, yeah.
I remember, the only thing I remember I did read it for a class in junior high. The only thing I remember is we skipped like 3 chapters of it.
Teacher's skipping chapters, you know that there's a lot of filler in that shit.
They told us it's because it's all about sort of the whaling process and that wasn't important for some reason in this book about hunting
whales.
You know
who took a page from that is the Girl with a Dragon Tattoo writer who would do like 30 pages of like, this is how international stocks and finances work.
Yeah. And I understand that. Like a lot of books, some of the interest is they're showing you a world that you've never... seen about or you're curious about, like Tom Clancy novels, sort of learning the intricacies of how this air to sea to air and back to the sea system works. If you're into that kind of thing, it gives you a window into it.
But even, you know, it's sort of the nerd cliche, but the George R.R. Martin novels, we make fun of it in one of our songs, how, you know, every meal there's 6 pages describing in intricate detail what was served, and then there's 3 pages on the various sigils and the various types of armor and the layers of armor that somebody's wearing. And, I guess it's about world building. I think it just works better for some authors and in some contexts than others.
Well, see, I actually love that. Like, I can make fun of it, but at the same time, it is deep. And why the Tolkien books are great is that he has built out this world that is so deep that it's literally spawned, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and half the things that are nerd now.
Is that true? I'm so embarrassed. Like, how can I be sitting in Meltdown and not know that?
Well, not directly.
Yeah.
But that whole, in the 60s was when the Lord of the Rings that was really picked up culturally, like Led Zeppelin, all the references was because that was huge in the culture, in the counterculture. And you could sort of trace a line from that to Dungeons and Dragons, where people were fascinated with this deep world where all this mythology was taken from these different corners and brought together, and they wanted to play it out. Yeah. So there you have it. Let's get some dice. Let's create some rules.
They really
This has been Janet Vardy and Paul and Storm on Fantasy Half Hour podcast.
I know. No, but I am interested because, It is something that, and I'd love to know, you know, I mean, did you guys play when you were younger? Did you play when you were
a little bit. Not nearly as much as I should have given my nerd cred.
Because that's something that I was always just peripheral enough. Mm-hmm. Like, some people didn't know what it was or heard about it, not at all. Yeah. And I definitely had friends who played it, but have literally never sat down and, like, talked about it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think of it as Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. Like, that seems like a lot.
Dungeons weren't enough for you?
Couldn't be Dungeons or Dragons. But, yeah, so I do have a curiosity about that, because it is something that is like, just peripheral enough that I was like, that's not for me, I don't think. But I don't know. Maybe it would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was not given, to say it's over, but...
I was given the... And I think this is very common for Dungeons and Dragons. Given the red box by an uncle...
I don't even know.
The red box is the Dungeons and Dragons set would come in this red box that had several books in it and some sheets that
it was like
your characters.
The basic. It was the introductory.
It's a starter kit. Starter kit. Like, you could play Dungeons and Dragons just with everything in this box, and it had the dragon, and it was all archaic, and there was magic-y things on it. And I don't think my uncle had any idea what it was, but it was like, oh, my nephew, he has an imagination and probably likes...
My nephew's an indoor kid. He'll like this.
Exactly.
There
it was
you
the
go.
Gift for indoor kids.
There
and
you
there
go.
Were other kids that had also been given this box at the same time by people who had no idea what it was.
Okay.
And it did appeal, because there were movies like, all those great movies that aren't coming to mind right now. But it was in the culture. It was just neat to be able to play out these fantasies.
Yeah.
I know
well,
we didn't
did you
play
read,
it.
I know you didn't, I mean, we talked about, obviously, that not being maybe the best set of books, even though they're the most famous, but did you read science fiction stuff?
Big time for me.
Yeah, like Piers Anthony. That feels very Dungeons & Dragons
a little
adjacent.
Bit. A little bit. My parents had a huge shelf that was mostly full of sci-fi and fantasy, and I would just read from, like, age 7, whatever it was. Of course, I didn't get it all. I mean, Dune at age 8, I probably wasn't getting everything out of it. Yeah. But, yeah, that was part of it, too.
What about you, Paul?
I actually did not read a whole lot of sci-fi fantasy growing up. I dabbled in a lot of things, and it's not that I didn't like it, but I didn't. It just, for whatever reason, it didn't grab me at the time. I wasn't compelled to. I wasn't reading so much then anyway. I was a music nerd growing up. I was like band and
my
choir.
God, would
and
it
stuff.
Be so amazing if we had like the weird revelation on my podcast where you're like, honestly, I was a bit of a grease monkey. I was just outside working on my dad's car.
I
took a weird turn.
I was an outside linebacker for 3 years on my high school varsity football team, and I didn't really.
We go to all the keggers. You were like age 14.
I was buried so deep in pussy, guys. I don't remember. What? I'm uncomfortable.
Get out.
I didn't have a hand free for reading because there was a vagina on each one of them.
I thought of them as mittens, huh? Well, oh boy, Boys of Summer. God, I don't talk like this when I'm just doing ladies.
I know. Are we getting in trouble now?
Oh my gosh. Also, I should say, guys, that we are at the Nerdist Nerd Meltdown. I don't ever know what to call it, but we are upstairs at Meltdown recording this because, for those of you who listen to the podcast regularly, you know that I just have two mics. So in the past, when I've had two people on my podcast, they have to share a mic, and they're just sitting on my couch passing the mic back and forth.
Oh, like an ice cream cone.
Yeah, I mean, it really is.
We could have sat together like the Beatles.
You could have sat like the Beatles. Okay. Well,
today on Shitty Accents with Paul and Storm and Janet.
Ooh, I just lost the other. I would say I lost 25% more. So we're left with 25%. Probably
gotta,
all still paper dolls.
You got to work on your craft there, Janet.
I really do.
If you lose the Liverpudlians, you have nothing.
It's so true. But yeah, so we're here, and I know I always say when I don't do the podcast somewhere where there's like a rug that I'm just lying on, or it's a very snuggly podcast.
I was going to say, it always sounds like you've got, not to infantilize you, but I always imagine that either right next to you or lying on... underneath you, or certainly nearby, is one of those really big stuffed animals. Like, but like a not one you just shitty one you get at the fair, but like a quality one that you bought.
Steiff, like
you ordered online from Germany.
Giraffe that whose neck I stroke affectionately.
Right. It's got sapphire eyes.
I mean, that's not true, but it kind of would fit in my den. If that suddenly, if you're looking for a good Christmas gift, you guys like, should go in and
it's like
because those are expensive.
I could have gotten a beanbag chair, but instead I just got the really big fucking basset hound.
Yeah, no beanbags for me. That's too impersonal.
I know, right? You can never get up off them.
I can't really talk to a beanbag, you know, and I'm lonely. But yeah, so I feel there is a feeling of, first of all, I feel like I'm doing someone else's podcast. Like, I feel like I'm maybe a guest on yours, which is weird. And two, I never have an engineer. I have a very handsome young man I just met named Aristotle. So I wonder if I'm like peacocking a little bit.
That's
like,
right.
I've like hands buried in
as
pussy.
As a matter of
that's
fact,
just not
it.
Something I would say in front of my dog.
Can we make that a thing? Could that become like a phrase? Like, oh God, I got my hands buried in pussy this week, man. But it doesn't mean you're having lots of sex. It means something.
Right.
I'm so busy.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
burdened.
Lay
it's
off,
good.
Man.
It's
I got
good.
Pussy mittens.
It's
I am,
good.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm sorry. I respectfully withdraw. I apologize. I didn't realize you were so busy.
I'm so buried in poon this week, man.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah, guys, dirty minds. Come on. We're not talking about that. We're talking about life.
Yes,
life
please.
Stuff.
Let's
oh,
talk
yeah.
about important
work
things.
Work stuff, career stuff.
Dungeons and Booty.
I did bring some sparkling water with me just in case people were worried that I wasn't going to at least burp once, though.
I was worried. I've been on tenterhooks waiting.
Got to fulfill that quota. Okay, so you were a music nerd. And,
I was.
And you weren't reading that much.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know. That's always hard,
should,
too.
Should we? Yeah, I suppose we should identify. This is Paul speaking right now for your future reference.
So awkward.
So you can go back and listen to the original
or
10 minutes.
Or one of you could do like a falsetto. Huh?
Okay. No, I can't. I can't do that today. I've lost my falsetto.
I could do more accent.
Perfect. That won't be distracting in any way.
This is more French accent.
If you could see that Paul's also sort of moving his shoulders.
I'm doing my like Winnie the
weird...
Pooh about to get honey
<That's>
dance.
<right.
laughs>
That's because you got, the, pussy
it.
Mittens on today.
Yeah, you really do. Okay, so what music were you nerding out over?
I was in band and choir all through junior high and high school. Our school district had a really great music program and a really shitty theater program.
Oh, and where's this?
And this is in north of Philly, about a half hour north of Philly, just suburbs, eastern Pennsylvania. And I had always, like, there was always sort of the, gee, this acting thing seems kind of cool thing floating around in the side of my brain. But because there was really no, you know, it was all the shit. Our high school did Grease 2 years in a row. That's how fucking lazy the guy who ran
so
the theater
sad.
Department was. It was the worst.
Oh,
stick
no.
with what you know.
And then they finally, that was like my.
Was there a repeat of actors too? Or is it just
there was a certain repeat. I don't think they had the same leads necessarily, but it was my sophomore and junior year the high school did Grease. And then to change it up in the senior year, Oklahoma, which all the kids love. Like that's the, you know, that's the level of laziness that was going on there. They just didn't give a shit. And like the high school next to us was Truman High School, which is regionally famous. Like they have this incredible theater department, and this guy ran it for 30 years who got featured in the New York Times when he retired.
My.
They were the first high school to do the high school adaptation of Rent.
Sure.
First high school to do, I think, the adaptation of Into the Woods. Like, they were really doing great shit.
When you say next to, do you literally
like,
mean next door?
Yeah, there was 4 feet away.
That's weird.
Attached to his house.
Yeah.
No, it was the neighboring school district.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I never really got too much into the theater thing, even though it was kind of a thing I thought I wanted to do. So instead, I creatively expressed myself through all of the, you know, choir and concert band and jazz band and marching band and all of that thing. So
So the D&D stuff sounds like you were just so busy you didn't have time to
roll a die. I had a few friends who sort of did that kind of thing, but none of us were sort of hardcore. That brand of nerd.
And also, is that an easy thing to dabble in? Isn't that kind of like you're in or you're out, sort of?
No, it's dabbleable.
Complicated.
It wasn't
it
the only thing we did, and we didn't do it properly. Like, there are a lot of rules to play the game properly, and you just would sort of do it like, you know, if you were out playing tag, you play it how you want to play.
Sure, okay.
So it was not a hardcore. There were certainly those people, and I always imagined they lived out in, you know, here in L.A. There were all these awesome nerdy kids who just had these very complicated Dungeons and Dragons lives, but not where I lived. You know, we were not for the full thing.
Did you pick, and I will let this go in a second, but do you pick one character that you stay with always, or is someone like, okay, this time I'm a...
When you're playing it properly, at least back then, I think you'd pick a character, and the idea was you'd gain experience points and you'd level him up and he'd get more and more powerful, or she would get more and more powerful. And you try to keep that character alive. I don't think you had to exclusively play it all the time.
Yeah, we would have a couple of characters we would run, and that was the thing, is to sort of develop them, and the Dungeon Master would create these adventures so you could level up your character. But it was fun to sort of put on different clothes.
And Storm, who were you drawn to? What characters?
The magic-y stuff. The fighters just seem like jerks to me. Uh-huh. It's like, why do I want to be that?
Yeah.
The thing that the tormentor. Not that I was...
But certainly some kids, I'm sure, were like, I finally get to be the person in power.
Who has the sword now? It's me.
Yeah, exactly.
And I will smite thee the way I've been smitten so many times.
So you weren't an angry D&D player.
No, not at all.
Sweet, gentle magic.
No, I had my moves.
Poof. Yeah.
Yeah, I cast Bunny.
No, I kicked ass in my own way. We all had our things that we did. But no.
Like your magic user was an incredible dancer.
Yeah. not so much.
Fierce.
It was an opportunity to express my weirdness in a safe space.
All right. So, and where was this for you?
This was in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. If you've ever heard Patton Oswalt, I'm trying to remember which album of it is, where you were in Washington, D.C. at the time when Fugazi and the punk scene was happening on, but it might as well have been happening in Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're in these suburbs, and it had nothing to do with you. That was the dangerous place where all the bad kids go, or whatever it was.
That's where people go to smoke.
That's right.
That's right.
It's down to Washington, D.C.
Once you cross that border into Washington, D.C. proper.
Oh, yeah.
You light it up.
They hand you a pack of Benson and Hedges.
That's right. Did you have a sense of the... This is coming from the curiosity of, like... You know, the southwestern city of Tucson, which does not feel particularly patriotic.
Okay.
But, like, you know, East Coast is already so different, I think, from West Coast sensibility. And then on top of that, I'm always interested when people are from the D.C. area, if you have this sort of, like, more, like a thicker disdain for sort of, like, government USA, I'm saluting right now. or do you have sort of a more participative sense of it? Like, well, a lot of people are in government, and, like, as a young person, I feel more involved or more motivated to be involved.
I'm both more realistic and cynical, but also I feel I am weirdly patriotic. I'm not jingoistic about it, but the Washington Post was my hometown newspaper, and... their specialty, of course, with politics. So you see all the details of it and actually get very annoyed with most movies and television that come out about Washington just because it is just so wrong.
Yeah.
And down
to the
geography.
That is what people on the inside say, too.
The cliche is that D.C. is basically Hollywood for ugly people. And it's shameful how true that is.
Yeah.
Like, it's all the politics and backbiting and back dealings and intricacies of the entertainment industry.
Like, so much networking and so many sort of, like, this is the bar we go to after work because so-and-so might be there, that kind of thing.
Although I'm the son of bureaucrats. They worked for different departments of the government. So to me, government wasn't politics. Government was government. And that's really very true. And that's sort of being challenged today that, you know, there shouldn't be this government that is this continuum that provides stability. To me, that's sort of what it was. It's okay. This is a government that's sort of this machinery that chugs along, and it's not the pictures of politicians and all of that stuff.
Yeah. So what about, like, student government for both of you? Was there
I was selected in second grade to be part of student government, and
Wonderful.
It was the thing where it was your peers would say, who do you think should be your representative, and what do second graders know? Greg! My name was still Greg back then.
Uh-huh.
Greg should be in it. And I remember I missed the second meeting, and all you had to do at that point was just show up for the meetings. In second grade, there's not a lot of responsibility.
I know, what were you so
busy doing? Were you impeached? Did they march you off on Air Marine One?
They sort of did, or they brought me back to the class. And I remember the deep sense of shame, and I have not thought about this in years. It was palpable.
Oh, man, this is what I love about JB Club. Here we go to the moment of the deep sense of shame.
It's not that I intend to root around for the shame and darkness, but
no, I love to wallow in shame. No, because I had been sent on this mission to represent my fellow students to do nothing except go to this meeting. And when I showed back up because I had been late, it was like, wow, your peers who said you're the one who's going to represent us, you screwed it up. You couldn't even show up to a meeting on time.
Well, so and thus I can only assume you would never run for office since that trauma.
For a lot of other reasons, but yeah.
No, just that.
Yeah, I instantly gained a great disdain for any power structures and generally ran towards the thing that other people weren't doing.
Mm-hmm. Were you good students, though? Both of you?
I was one of those annoying kids who it always came easily, and as such, I always, and to this day, frankly, have a really shitty work ethic because I never had to work very hard to get A's.
That is tough, huh?
Yeah.
I do feel a little weird about that because when I talk to people who are like, yeah, I went to a really tough Catholic high school, it's very challenging, you know, I feel like I got a great education. I don't know that I lean on that part of the conversation very often about the kind of work ethic that it establishes, but I've certainly said before, and I'm sure we'll say again,
yeah,
I'm saying right now, that it is hard when you, if you're a bright student and you're not particularly challenged, it's great because you can sort of get good grades and then have other interests or whatever, but it's true that it didn't really instill in me the sort of like fail till you succeed thing. It was more just like, well, stuff's supposed to be easy, right? And if it's hard, stay away.
Yeah, I was very much like that. And again, kind of still am to this day, where like I don't like to take on things that are difficult and don't come very quickly. You know, I mean, the music thing, it turned out I was good at it and did it all through high school and did well. But I really wish, I mean, I sound like such an asshole saying this, but I wish I hadn't been as good as I was, because I never really had to work and I never challenged myself. And I would, you know, looking back, I really wish I would have challenged myself to say, learn piano.
Yeah.
Or really be a better musician than I ended up being.
Well, I think that's the point, right? Is I can identify with that. I don't think you sound like an asshole, because what you're really saying is, when you say, I wish I weren't as good as I was, what you're really saying, I wish I would have known how good I could have been.
Exactly.
Right? And that's how we all feel, unless we're pushed to the brink.
I feel like I'm even worse than that, because I think I was self-aware enough at the time to say, you know, I could put in this work and I really could be pretty fucking good at this, but nah, because you know, my show is going to be on in half an hour and I really didn't want anything to interrupt my 7 hours of television every day.
So you're a TV kid also.
Oh my god, did I love television.
What about you, Storm?
Still this day.
I did as a kid, but books were the thing where I disappeared into the most.
What were you really excited about reading? I'm not pinning you to sci-fi and stuff like that.
No, it was sci-fi. Yeah. Like I read.
Did you read Ray Bradbury? Shout out to my favorite author.
Yes, a lot of Ray Bradbury.
Word up, Ray.
Yeah.
Much love.
Heinlein and Asimov. I ripped through everything of Asimov. Not his scientific papers. I didn't go quite that deep.
You didn't go that deep. It's okay.
I didn't go that deep. I'm not a true Asimov nerd.
I guess not.
I remember the and then the whole Anne McCaffrey Dragon Rider series. Remember reading that? The Frank Herbert stuff. Anything, everything. Arthur C. Clarke, just everything.
It's funny. I don't. And you didn't really get into that stuff.
I'm excited
to talk about TV in a second, though.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
But what I was going to say is another opportunity to just nerd out over Ray Bradbury. But I think what's funny for me is I did read all the Dune books, but I didn't have a lot of, like, the fantasy stuff never really grabbed me. The sci-fi stuff kind of did, but, like, I was really particular about it. Like, I tried Heinlein, and I didn't really get into him. I tried Asimov, I didn't get that into him, but I was so obsessed with Ray Bradbury, you'd think that I would have gone a little further outside. And I did read a lot of Arthur C. Clarke, too. But this is my question to you about those other authors that you were describing. What I love about Bradbury and what I loved about Arthur C. Clarke, both though honestly to a lesser extent, was how incredibly like human and emotional the sci-fi was, right? Yeah. Which is like what's kind of the greatest thing about sci-fi and why like even Carl Sagan and the actual world of astronomy is so interesting. But I really feel like Ray Bradbury, like they threw him into sci-fi because like, where else are you going to put him? Because he was so fascinated by the future and space, and he was into kind of predictive stuff where you go, wow, he was super right, just like a lot of those writers were. But then so much of it, too, is just about, like the longings of the human heart and sort of, you know, like, what if this was a thing? Or here's a weird dream this guy has. It's like, well, that's not sci-fi. That's just, like, magic weird kind of. Like something Wicked This Way Comes. Sorry.
They didn't have the term back then, speculative fiction, which sort of puts it in a basket. And I've actually been thinking about this lately, the difference between sci-fi and fantasy. And I'm the same way. I've been more drawn to sci-fi. The fantasy stuff was what I read when, you know, sci-fi wasn't appearing on my parents' shelves.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, I'll read this now. But that it seems to me like science fiction is generally less emotional and about characters and, you know, and meaning in that way. And it slides towards fantasy, which seems to be much more about emotional engagement. And that's not a hard and fast thing. I think I was talking with John Scalzi about this. Why is it that a book like...
Nice name drop, by the way.
Yeah, good.
I was just talking with my close personal friend, John Scalzi, about this the other day in one of our many conversations
talking with this guy about things.
If you were that cool, you wouldn't even remember his
I was
name.
Talking about this dude, John.
Some dude, yeah.
But like a series like Patrick Rothfuss's Name of the Wind, people become so engaged with that. And really,
Pat Rothfuss, he came and did. Sorry, I got excited for a second. Now we're named right now. I'm name dropping the festival.
Now,
it all came together.
All even up.
Yeah.
But people are so avid about him as an author and the sort of things, fan art, and just the level of love and engagement versus most sci-fi authors, which people love, but it's a different thing. It's like, yeah, I like the way you told that story, and not, oh, I wish I could be character X, and
right,
I imagine that I am that.
Yeah.
And that it's just a difference in storytelling and how you're engaging the readers. But I was drawn to both for whatever they were doing.
Yeah.
And not there are only two types, but anyone who could build a world in any way was interesting to me.
Did you hear that This American Life, was it about the person who tracked down, was it Piers Anthony or was it some other, well, this is classic Varney.
Yeah.
let me mention a thing I don't remember very well and see if someone can pick up the pieces after I've shattered my story. somebody just was someone
was
as a
Salinger?
Young person, and it was not, for sure not J.D. Salinger. I almost thought it was Piers Anthony, but if it wasn't him, it was another very serial, like he made a million of these books. Some kid like ran away from home and found this author, and the author like let him spend the night or something like that. You know, it was
they
just
said,
sort of
you
like,
the man now, dog.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was. I think it was very because everyone loved Finding Forrester.
Oh, didn't we all?
The trailer.
Oh my God, so robbed, so robbed at the Oscars of 19
boy.
Whatever year that was.
Oh, I don't know. No. And what about the TV that you're into?
Oh, God.
Like sitcoms?
I watched it all. If it was on, I was watching it.
Didn't have like the discerning snob taste
of
a teenager finding his way?
No, I was a TV omnivore. I mean, I liked comedies
more
than anything else. Certainly, I'd watch all the shitty late 70s, early 80s sitcoms, you know, Bosom Buddies, Perfect Strangers. Man, I can't believe I used to think Perfect Strangers was good.
Well,
I feel like I stand by it still.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
This is what I say about
it.
This is what I say about it. Yes, it is bad. I love my favorite things when someone starts a sentence and then makes everyone wait while they take a drink. Is that it's clowning.
It is.
And that I approve of. Like, it's so silly and so slapstick. And Mark Hambert is such an amazing clown. Like, his physical comedy and his sort of, like, his takes and stuff.
Yeah.
I do respect
they certainly
that
were.
Side
they
of
were
it.
They were very archetypal straight man and funny man.
Yeah,
you know, not really that far removed from like Martin and Lewis. Not that we could have known it back then.
Yeah.
If we really want to ground this in some sort of, we're going to really justify
make it part
our
of
enjoying
the
a Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
why is that begs a question? That's an improper term. But why have clowns and the idea of clowning, how has that become such a pejorative thing as it seems to have?
That's a good question.
You mean on television or just in
just generally?
General?
I mean, obviously,
well,
sort
I think
of the
clowns,
creepy clown
I think
thing.
Clowns always have had, like, you know, just sort of the idea of clowns, period. There's always been that seedy, you know, alcoholics sleeping in sawdust, Ringling Brothers, Clyde Beatty, Cole Brothers circus kind of.
Right. That's not the only
it.
Type of clown.
Well, but you mean more sort of like the just the like the slapsticky performance kind of thing. It's actually I would say it has moved, as I say this having two daughters and having grown up watched all this in the 90s, it moved over to Nickelodeon and then the Disney Channel.
Because
if you watch any of the really popular shows there, it's all very broad. There's a lot of slapstick, and I think that's where, you know, the niche
right.
found itself. And it moved off of the major networks because they couldn't compete.
Yeah.
Because the Marx Brothers, really, each of them fills the role of what the classic clowns were.
Mm-hmm.
Not like Ringling Brothers, although it is. But there's like the boss clown, and there's the the falling down clown. I don't remember what they all are.
And there's
they sort of fit that.
Semitic clown. And the fourth clown who nobody remembers.
Yeah, that was very important in medieval Italy.
That's right. That's fun. Yeah, that was one thing about studying theater in school, is like finding the roots of some of that stuff where you're like, oh, yeah.
But yeah, I devoured it all. I loved Carson. I was born in 1970.
Carson.
I think we were both born in 1970, right? So we grew up, like, you know, 76 through 89 were our prime television watching years. And it was really a pretty incredible time period for television as far as that goes. But for me especially, like, it's not like I was staying up till one every night, but I just thought Johnny Carson was the coolest, funniest guy. I loved, you know, I learned a lot about how to handle when a joke bombs, just watching it. That was when he was at his best.
Yeah.
And I just loved the whole atmosphere of, like, I wanted to live on the Tonight Show.
Interesting.
Like, I wanted to sit around, you know, here's all these cool people just dropping by, talking about stuff and being funny and smoking. Not that I wanted to smoke, but it seemed cool that they were all sitting around smoking.
No, smoking's
on
cool.
TV. And I loved the idea exactly. of Southern California.
Yeah.
And because, you know, when you're that young, you imagine all famous people know each other and they just sit around and drink cocktails and are funny at each other,
which turns out is completely true.
It totally is. And I just loved everything about that. I mean, I love Saturday Night Live too, but there's, you know, there's a grittiness and sort of an aggression to East Coast comedy, especially of sort of that era.
Yeah.
To oversimplify it, but there was, you know, it was a different kind of enjoyment. But I loved the sort of the celebrityness of that whole, you know, the whole
That's
Carson
so interesting.
Thing.
I like your perspective on it.
You know, for the same reason I loved watching, like, Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas show when that was on. It was just sort of, you know, these old white dudes hanging out, chatting.
It's interesting.
And being famous.
Yeah.
I wanted every bit of it.
I don't feel like it. I guess I didn't have that. I don't remember watching. Like, the first time I felt like a late night show was, for me, was Conan O'Brien in college.
Mm.
And I am younger than you guys, but even like Letterman and Leno, or, you know, whoever's happening, if you just like jump ahead a few years to when my prime TV years would be, I think I just still wasn't. Like, my dad definitely watched Letterman. I felt like that was his thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, you know. And there was a lot of stuff I watched with my dad, but the late night stuff, I didn't really. I was just like, I don't know. I don't get it. I think.
Yeah.
Then Conan O'Brien, I was like, this is for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What about you with late night?
I dabbled. I wasn't as in deep. I did watch all the shows, Tonight Show, I did in that era. I was more drowned. I was drowned.
Drowned by television. Drowned we all were.
I was.
We
just
all
washed
were.
Over me. I was more drawn to stuff that was weird. So I found
Twilight Zone stuff.
Loved Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
The Muppet Show, extraordinarily weird. And then Monty Python. I was one of the kids who was up late on Sunday nights eating peanut butter dipped in sugar from a spoon.
Our whole generation, like, all we know of British culture growing up was Benny Hill and Monty Python.
Yeah, like, we can tell you who the main ministers were in England in 1969, but I couldn't tell you who our senator was.
That's great. Isn't that just how it should be? No, it's not at all. And this is the next question about sort of your interest in comedy is, you know, I have friends who, and I don't know that I probably wasn't really this person, but even like in high school, who sort of already knew that they weren't just fans. They wanted to also be doing that. Were you guys there, or were you sort of more where I was, which was like, I knew I was a huge fan of like Kids in the Hall.
Right.
But I don't know that I took that to the next place in my brain. Like, well, I should do comedy, even though I was doing theater. Like, I still didn't make that leap.
It happened accidentally, and I think I speak for both of us, that our path to becoming full-time professional musicians and funny people was just entirely accidental. This hobby a cappella group that didn't start out being for laughs just became that.
This is post-college.
Post-college.
Like, early 90s.
Just looking back, it makes sense that both of us were always doing things that were musical and to some extent funny, And just eventually, it's like, okay, this is where we're supposed to be. And you look around and say, okay, we're doing funny music. We're doing funny music.
Did you do funny? Did you do regular music in high school? I don't know if we got there yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And the theater thing. Mostly, we didn't have a choir, but there was a show choir. So did that, learn jazz
hands. I don't know what that means.
Show choir is like if you go to a theme park.
Like proto,
they have,
proto glee.
Okay.
Yeah,
like
that's
today
much
we're
what
joined
it
by the yeah, okay.
So you take these popular songs or less popular songs and you do song and dance routines.
Okay.
And you're singing and dancing. It's
I don't
basically
know. I think my school just had like a maybe just a choir that
most
yeah.
did
we
that's
take it
what
as
I,
an elective, but that was you didn't do anything with it.
And that's what I had wanted to do, but they didn't have one, which is very weird. And it was run by the same woman who ran the theater department. And then I started my first a cappella group in high school, just a couple of guys to do doo-wop songs and all of that. That was always part of it. And in college, looking back, it seemed like I actually majored in a cappella, that I spent all of my time and energy and love on our college a cappella group, and the studying thing was something you just kind of had to do.
Yeah. That's so great that it's still something that it's not like you were partying and not paying attention to school. Like you were actually.
Well, it was part of it too. Yeah. It was almost an alternate.
It was a social scene.
It was. Yeah. It was an alternate Greek system. Like it. My college, University of Maryland, certainly had fraternities, but that seemed like, again, that was the normal or the established thing to do. No, I'm going to go with this bunch of people and go beep and boop and bop.
I love beeping, booping, and bopping.
It is
not
great.
So much with the booping, but the beeping and the bopping. I mean.
Yeah. You boop when you have to. Change it up with the booping.
That's the problem, is to get the beeping and the bopping, you got to put up with the booping.
That's right.
Silver lining, clouds, something. I don't know.
That's where having a good work ethic comes in.
That's
I wouldn't know.
Get through those boops. You can't skip past the boops. Paul, come on.
I know. I know this. I don't have to like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yay.
Yeah, I think I was where you were as far as, like, I really enjoyed performing, and I loved attention, which is, it's not like I was ever denied it. I had this, I was, when we first talked about what you were going to have us on, I'm like, I'm going to be the least interesting JV club guest ever, because I had an extremely normal, safe upbringing. I had no major trauma, no major issues at school or anything like that.
We've had plenty of people who've just been like, no,
that's
listen,
true. You did
I was really lucky. I'm very often surprised when something presents itself, because I don't know most of the time in advance. Like, honestly, sometimes when someone's like, and then I lost my mom, I'm like, oh, fuck.
Missed that one.
Do you want to talk about that? Do you not want to talk about that? You know? I don't necessarily subscribe to this idea that, like, the only way to be funny is to be broken. You know?
Right.
That's
something
that, like, maybe I sort of like accept it as an umbrella kind of jokey thing that comics say. Mm-hmm. And then especially once I started doing the podcast, I was like, I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's true for me. You know, I don't know. I don't feel like I was like tormented.
I do sort of feel sometimes like to be a performer of any sort, not just comedy, that there is some flaw that I call it a flaw. Maybe it's not.
There's a hole you're trying to fill of some sort.
Yeah, or that, you have this need for outside approval.
Yeah.
And I think it's only a flaw if you allow it to be. If you put it to constructive use, then it's not.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I loved performing and I loved doing all that, but I never quite... I mean, I knew it was a potential career choice to make. And I think I may have sort of vaguely entertained it back in the high school days, but I don't think I ever made the full connection. Like, this is a viable thing I can try.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was you know, it's the easier path just to sort of do the things I was already good at and established at.
Yeah.
That said, I went to college. I feel like I'm one of the few people I know that claims to feel like they've done college right. Like, I went to... We had a large high school.
Congratulations. I do
Thank
think
you.
That that's rare,
yeah.
actually.
We had a very large high school, the kind, you know, very large student body, and it's the kind of thing where you either get lost or you have lots of opportunities and take care of them. Luckily, I was sort of built to do the latter. So then I went to Penn State, this very large state school in the middle of Pennsylvania, and I knew going in two things. I knew I had no clue what I wanted to do with my life, and I knew that I wanted to try lots of stuff because I knew I was never going to get this opportunity again. So I spent those 4 years. For a year, I was a jazz DJ on the college radio station. And
nice.
I was in the marching band there at Penn State. And I was in a music fraternity. And I tried doing a couple of musicals. And I knew, dabbling in lots of stuff. But I really valued that experience of, you know, while it would have been nice to have this hyper-focus and already know what I wanted to do, whether it was acting or being a doctor or whatever, I'm glad I got the chance to just try all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
God,
yeah, I was undeclared for my freshman year. And then I think I, like, begrudgingly became a theater major.
Yeah.
I don't really know what else to do.
Yeah.
But it was by that time I already, like, when I was a kid, I was sure that that's what I wanted to do. And then as soon as I got old enough to realize it seemed probably hard or maybe like, mm-hmm. oh, maybe that's not realistic, I, like, let that go. And then, yeah, it became accidental for me, too. By the time you got to college, did you feel focused?
No, I was never focused, and I'm still not.
Same.
And I've actually sort of developed a work ethic, but I did not have it even up into my mid-20s.
Yeah.
So it was I went in as radio, television, and film. I really wanted to be a radio DJ and did that on the college campus. But then they got rid of that major after my freshman year.
Because of you.
Yeah, they're like, you
we all know what happened with Storm, everybody.
Well, we got two choices. Yeah. We can either have this kid be a graduate of our department, or we can close the apartment.
It was pretty much that.
Yeah.
It was pretty much
collateral
that.
Collateral damage.
So I took my time in college. I switched over to American Studies, which is kind of like English.
That seems big, for sure.
Incredibly vague. Turns out to have been useful. It's really a major about being able to deconstruct anything. Anything. Look at a TV commercial. Look at that fan. Look at, you know, think about the air. What does it mean for this?
Right,
what does it mean
right.
for that? And why does this come from? So it's kind of useful, I think, in comedy because you are observing
sure.
and deconstructing and then putting it back together in a way that's ridiculous or interesting.
That's so true.
Recontextualizing right. your environment.
And
straight
gee.
Out of an American Studies textbook.
Thank you.
I think fascinated.
I probably owned the second edition of that book.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And what about relationships in high school?
They mostly didn't exist for me.
Okay, already.
I had a girlfriend, my first actual, I had a semi-girlfriend for a little bit in seventh grade and then didn't have an actual girlfriend until partway through my senior year. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't good at girls.
Yeah.
And, but that's, you know, that's how it worked for me.
Also not good at girls. I hate my high school self. I found I would obsess over a girl.
Sure.
Usually for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And would just be so broken up. And I would always pick my obsession poorly.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I'm like, why? What? Her?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I know there were always girls that were interested, but I just was so obsessed.
Yeah. And you'd have to be obsessed for like the remote girl way over there who you know will never even give you the time of day. Yep.
Of course.
I was right there with you, my man.
Is that basically just like a readiness thing of like, am I ready to sort of make it into
a real thing?
I think I
wasn't very emotionally mature for most of my up through part of college.
Do you guys have brothers and sisters?
I have one older brother.
Paul has an older brother.
One older sister.
Storm has an older sister. Okay.
Yeah, right. So we're both youngest.
Mm-hmm. The babies.
Well, I think I had a whole bunch of crap in my head about what relationships and romance were supposed to be because of those fantasy novels.
Well,
yeah.
I think that's a really good point. I do. I mean, I think that's true. If you're battling sort of where your physical and emotional development is, and you're somebody who is like very stimulated by all of the sort of messages that we're taking in American.
All I
studies.
Need is mm-hmm. just a bodice to rip. That's so much to ask for.
They weren't those kind of fantasy novels, Paul.
Wow, I feel like that stuff pops up in a lot of fantasy novels now. That's probably why I would have read fantasy novels, to be honest with you, because I was the sort of...
Oh, it does.
I can say I was a salacious kid, but I guess I was like, what is all this about, you know? Like, I wanted to... If friends of, like, staying in friends' houses and stuff, and they had, like, HBO, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like just boys are like, what's on late, you know? We would try to, like,
oh, my God, they have Cinemax because their parents are cool.
Yeah. My friend did, and I saw so much, like, softcore stuff where I was like, mm-hmm. I don't think I'm supposed to be watching this. But like, and also, I mean, I don't know. Why don't we have to go into this? But the whole
of course
imbalance
we do.
Of
now
sex
you must.
And violence on television.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
the
stuff I was seeing that was violent, I might at least was balanced out with some sex. I don't know. I don't know. You know what I mean?
For every
always
bit of,
leaven the violence with sex.
A new life may be born after the Terminator ripped through hundreds of people.
For every episode of the A-Team, you must watch.
That's right.
30 minutes of Ursula Andress movie
yeah.
at 11:45 at night on
that's
a Saturday.
A Red Shoe Diary.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Oh, Duchovny. He's
I don't know. What is the Red Shoe? Is there like a real, are there real red shoes?
I don't know the mythology well enough.
I'm going to get into that ASAP. What if that's I somehow got David Duchovny, but I only would talk about the mythology? Not even his participation in it.
That's right.
Just the mythology. Just the mythology. As if we were an expert, not
aren't we all really the Red Shoe, if you think about it?
That is so true, American Studies.
That's right. It's right back around.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that totally makes sense. And also, I've said this before, but maybe not in these terms, but I feel like even though I had kind of relationships and stuff, I still would have a crush on someone mm-hmm, who was totally mm-hmm. unattainable for one reason or another and sort yep. of fixate on that person, even though other things that were like real life, mm-hmm. quote unquote, were happening. So I think maybe that's just part of that time period too.
Yeah.
Like you
yeah.
are fantasy building
yeah.
for yourself.
And
because you don't, it can't possibly be real the way your fantasies are making it shape, or I don't know.
I think it's probably healthy too, like for you to obsess over this person, decide they're the one, you're done. I mean, I know that happens.
Right.
But you're trying on different ideas, not just about other people, but yourself and just learning and experiencing.
Absolutely.
Like Paul's college experience.
That's right. Except not with ladies.
The ladyless college.
Them all.
I had the one high school girlfriend like my senior year into my freshman year in college.
And how did that develop? Was it like a friend who turned into a girlfriend? Was it somebody that you did kind of muster up the guts to?
No, it was kind of I always thought she was cute, yeah. and then found out through friends she was kind of interested, and just sort of developed from there. And we both, the one thing we had really in common was we both really really loved me.
We
really thought I was
that's
great.
That's a nice, safe choice.
No, yeah, it was just, I mean, it was, you know, she was a wonderful person, and we were just both, you know, we were high school kids, and we were 17, and felt it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, she went to a different school, and we just broke up, and then half a year later, I met the woman who turned into my wife.
Mm.
So I got it right on the third try.
Okay. I was picturing this magic wand, poof, and she
yeah.
becomes your
no,
wife.
it was ridiculous. Like I'm sure if I had not met her, I would still be living in my mom's basement, path of least resistance, and maybe have had one relationship since then.
Do you think she would agree with that?
Probably. She certainly would agree yeah. that I would like. I know for a fact that I got incredibly lucky, you know, timing wise, and that she would actually pay attention to me and thought I was worth her while, because God knows I'm never going to do any better.
Well, I mean, you laugh and like that's, and I think that you're underselling yourself, but I do also feel like there is this sort of like weird, it is, everything does come back to American Studies. It truly, truly does, because
mm-hmm,
I do feel, because it goes back to the burden of choice, right? Is that if
yeah.
you're sort of like in this place where you feel like, but what if there's always something better or someone
right.
better? And so, and because the way that we're flooded with that same stimuli that we were just talking about, it's kind of nice to avoid being a person who's like, I don't know though, maybe
yeah.
like that,
mm-hmm.
maybe there's like this amazing gallop off into the sunset person that like
yeah.
I'm missing out on because I'm with this great person who thinks I'm a quality
right.
human.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This person
right.
who compliments me
yeah.
and validates
like
me.
A terrific experience and we're growing together. But no,
yeah.
that's not any
yeah.
good.
No, I do have to say I do not in the least miss being single, any aspect of being single.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I managed to do right. You
yeah.
know, among however many things I've done right in my life, that's easily up there. And
that's so nice.
I'm glad I did. If there's, you know, if there's something I had to have screwed up, I'm glad it wasn't that.
Yeah. That's when you renew your vows. That will be like the prime sentence.
Right.
We just
tried to screw
right
up
on
something.
Right on the invitation. Didn't screw up.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. Reminding everyone. Just reminding everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are here today to celebrate the fact that Paul has not yet fucked this up.
Oh, that's great. Cheers to that.
We just 20th anniversary last month.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. God,
so
there. Amazing.
So they're divorced people.
Yeah. Everyone. yeah. Everyone else.
Stinky failures.
Hey, Aristotle, how much time have we done? I haven't been paying attention because I'm usually looking at my computer. 50? Okay, so we should get into some MASH, and maybe I did bring a couple cootie
oh,
catchers.
Oh, totally.
Ooh,
yeah.
How
catchers.
They travel well. Luckily,
yeah,
I have games that aren't like giant. Let me just unfold this huge origami sun I need you to climb into. That's not a thing.
That would be so awesome, though.
Wouldn't it?
Oh, my God.
What did I just describe? It was like a Suddenly I have like a podcast about beautiful Japanese paper. speaking of paper folding. Okay, Paul, why don't I start with you with this cootie catcher, and we'll just
okay, what am I
even
doing?
Though it's classic, you probably already answered all these questions.
Okay.
So pick one of these.
I'm going to go green.
G-R-E-E-N.
Three.
One, two, three.
And eight.
Eight. Okay, question for eight. No, this is good. Who was your biggest role model or idol as a teen, and has that changed? Good one.
You'd think I would have thought of answers for this.
No. No. Mm. That's why some of these, you know, they don't get talked about.
The fresh ones.
Biggest role model as a teen.
It's always, and by the way, those sort of, what's that word? Hyperbole. Like, that's a lot of pressure. But so I should have just expanded it out to, like, who's someone that you really looked up to, or, you know. Because there was probably a time where I would have said, like, Weird Al Yankovic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow, I'm trying to think. Who was I really into specifically back then? Because I kind of had a buckshot approach to. There was never any like the one guy, like Paul McCartney or something like that. Though I certainly loved him.
Yeah.
I will.
I mean, it sounds like Johnny Carson.
Carson was a big one. You know, I mean, it's not like I had posters of him in my room or anything, but I just thought
that's disappointing.
I'd look at Johnny Carson and not knowing. Not following the tabloids and not knowing what you can find out on the internet now. We'd look at Carson and it's like, wow, that guy just got his shit together. He shows up, he hangs out for an hour and a half, and he makes a shit ton of money, and he hangs out with a bunch of cool people, and he's hilarious.
Living the dream.
And he is America's host.
Sure. That totally makes sense. Carson. And how do you feel about him now? Because of all aforementioned...
I mean, you have to acknowledge a person's flaws. And mm-hmm. apparently he was not the most emotionally available guy there ever was. Uh-huh. And he was not the greatest person to his many wives. Uh-huh. But that said, I mean, he still just sort of represents this icon and this particular... There's a vibe to him of that sort of 70s and 80s... America at the time and where I was in my life. I guess it's the same for anyone. It's sort of more sort of what he represents and reminds me of in my life at that time, more so than him specifically and things he did, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll go with Carson.
I wonder if... I was going to say that sounds like a show I would watch now, and then I thought, like, oh, I wonder if Larry Sanders, like, how much influence Carson had on Chandler,
Yeah,
yeah.
You would think.
I think a lot of the inspiration was from that. Okay, Storm, we'll do a different cootie catcher.
All right, here
you.
We go. Here we go. Let's catch some cooties.
That reminds me, someone finally emailed me, and I think it's her name's Laura. And Laura, I'm sorry that I don't have your name in front of me, but I'm going to give you a shout out in my intro anyway. But she sent me an actual, like, a whole diagram of why they were called cootie catchers.
And
It's like a game that you would play where you would somehow you would show that there were no cooties on one thing, but then you would, like, go like this, and then you put it near their hair, and you'd fold it the other way and go, I caught them, and then you would have the cooties drawn in there.
Got it.
So it does have real medical significance.
Why are the cooties on my head two-dimensional, and they look permanently affixed to the paper there?
Aren't you glad that I cured you of a horrible, horrible pestilence?
Oh my god, I'm sorry. Thank you for curing my
You're
cooties.
Welcome.
Well, I have to
good
come
day
back
to
for,
you,
well,
sir.
I have to come back for regular treatments
I
now,
said
ma'am.
Good day. All right, scene and pick one.
Okay, pink.
P-I-N-K.
7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
2.
A 2. Oh, 1, 2. Yeah, that's what I meant to do. Sorry. 1, 2. And now a number.
8.
Okay, great. Oh, interesting. Double 8. Oh.
Oh,
I've never seen this one. I've literally never read this one.
All right,
one.
Let's see what happens.
And I didn't write this. If someone paid you $1 million to be a teenager again for 1 year, would you do it? Also, this will be Adam Sandler's next movie.
Well, I don't need $1 million, so no. No, I would say no. I do not want to be a teenager for a year. I do not. I don't want to do that.
That doesn't. Would you?
Well, I think I probably would. Here's a question. Here, two questions.
Yeah.
Or at least one. Would it have to be? Would you have to go back? Like, would I have to go back to say 1987
That's
and be 17
question.
During
I know.
Then, or would I be a teenager for a year starting now?
That's a great question.
And I guess the follow up question is: would I know what I know now? Like, do I go back with my current brain?
Well, that's the thing.
There's so many questions.
Like, I had a pretty, like, for me, I enjoyed my teenage years for the most
Let's
part.
Let's assume
I
mean, you have to
angsty.
Go back to that exact time. It is a full-on time travel where you have to live for a year.
You have to relive.
And yes, knowing what you know now.
Well,
as an adult person trapped inside your teenage self,
it's the question is like, do you know it's just going to be for a year, and when it's over, you're back?
Yes.
Like, is it basically tourism?
The whole time you're there, it's tourism. It's like Peggy Sue Got Married, but you agreed to it.
Okay, then absolutely. Then okay. Absolutely, okay. I would do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because the only problem with those teenage years is, of course, in hindsight, you know, it works out fine. I'm alive now, and I enjoy who I am. But back then, it was this thing of, oh, God, you know, who the heck am I? What is going on? And all the rest. But to be able to go through it with the wisdom of today would be fun.
God, I don't know, though, because when I really think about the breakdown of my life, I think I would struggle with going to class for a year. I mean, I was working every year, but getting up every morning, 5 days a week, pretty much, and going to school and then coming home and having a curfew and being like, well, here's me and my dad.
The thing
Meanwhile, the age I am is in my body. Like, I don't know. I'm living with my father again. This feels weird.
But you know the whole system and how it works. You could so easily be Ferris Bueller. You know?
Right.
You know where all of the doors are, where all of the traps are.
It's true.
You go back,
you have to like somehow siphon money off from your parents and invest in Apple stock.
Oh, for sure.
That's right.
I know. It's so fast. It's so sad how fast it becomes about money, but for sure.
I know, but you know,
for sure you're
what
like,
else are you going to do with all of that extra knowledge you have?
Yeah. Interesting. All right.
Yeah,
that was a good question.
It was a good question.
Okay, I'm getting some MASH questions. Let's do, first category will be, I think for you guys both, I'm forcing you into you have a vacation home in a fictional location.
Right.
Vacation home, fictional location. Okay. Let's see.
I could say in Rivendell from Lord of the Rings because it's idyllic.
I mean, you get
and
three.
Beautiful.
I need three.
I'll say that even though I know you would get super bored there super quick.
You got to shake things up.
Yeah.
My first... We each get three?
Mm-hmm.
Douglas Adams' universe.
Oh, sure. Good one.
I'm going to make that my second one because that's too damn good. Now, specifically where? Or would you just be a hitchhiker?
I'd be a hitchhiker. You just get to
see
everything.
You have a vacation home.
Yeah.
Well,
it would be like a ship.
Oh, your vacation home can be the with the infinite improbability drive, the heart of gold.
The heart of gold.
Yeah,
great.
There you go.
Yeah,
and that's true for you too. Your second one.
Yeah, that's too damn good. That's a great answer.
Great. To be clear, Neil Young was writing about that when he wrote Heart of Gold,
right? Of course.
Okay, great. Just wanted to make sure he was a huge sci-fi nerd.
Yeah.
Okay, and then second one for you, Storm.
Oh, second one for me, huh? Oh, wow. I am on the spot. Is it in a fixed point of time, or is it basically...
Oh, I don't even know what that question means, so I'm curious.
Well, basically, like, if I chose The Lord of the Rings or some part of it, like, to be in Rivendell...
Yeah. You could pick the era that you wanted
like
to be
like before Sauron comes in
for
and just messes everything
for
up.
Sure.
The first age.
Yeah, you can get as specific as you want. Yeah.
I would love to live in Bag End. I love the idea of having a larder full of all the most awesome food and big Teletubbies hills that you step out about in your bare feet. That would be, I think, very nice...
Bare, hairy feet.
Yeah, hairy feet. Like when you go there, you get hairy feet, even if you don't have hairy feet.
Yeah.
So that's my number two.
Okay, great. And then number three for both of you.
Even though I would actually hate the dressing part, I very recently listened to the Paul F. Tompkins Boy of Summer one you did. And while I personally would not enjoy the dressing up as much he would, there's still a piece of me that really wants to live in like Downton Abbey.
Oh yeah,
1910
sure.
to 1925
sure.
era. Is that Edwardian England at that time? It's not that past post Victorian, so is it?
It's definitely post Victorian. Yeah, it's like loosened up. Things start loosening
turn
up.
Of the
look.
Turn of
the
century. Turn of the century.
Yeah.
Super rich England.
I mean, you know, I just put down Abbey because
that's the
easy shortcut. Okay, what about three for you?
I'm gonna go with with Happy Days World.
Oh, amazing. 1950s amazing. Milwaukee.
But the fake 1950s Milwaukee.
Yes, the Happy Days.
Where there's a greaser Milwaukee. From the Bronx for some reason.
<That's right. laughs>
And I could drink a malt and ride a motorcycle and do my beeps and boops and doops.
Yeah, start and stop anything with just your fist.
Yeah.
Like not in that's a super
okay.
threatening
way. So you have a vacation
way.
Home in Happy Days World and you have Fonzie powers.
Oh, right. Fonzie, totally the ur
hero. You could just be like
hero.
That and get a date.
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Just like that.
I love it.
That's good.
That's one.
That's very
and
good.
I don't know. No insults intended here, Paul. But that is one of my new favorite.
That is none taken. That.
Because I will because I'm going to use that as a segue into three shows that you could jump into. Obviously, you've answered one of them with your vacation home, but now you get three new ones because and you get the
shows or movies.
All right, get a bonus.
I'm just going to do TV shows.
Oh no!
One. Yeah, I know. Different.
Damn it.
Different.
Damn it. Because I had one all
TV
I had one all picked out for movies.
Well, I this is easy for me.
Okay.
Muppet Show. I would
great.
Just so totally.
Agreed.
I am a man and a Muppet.
Agreed.
Oh, let me see. TV shows. I will say, maybe it's cliche, but I'll say Star Trek.
Sure. I don't know if anyone's ever said that
because everything,
before.
You know, it's a about that point, it's a peaceful Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
A lot of cool technology.
I'm going A-Team. Even though
old school A-Team, right?
Old school A-Team, yeah. Of course. The TV was there a newer? TV
oh, I
show?
Guess. Oh, sorry, I'm thinking of Hawaii 5-0. I got mixed up because the A-Team movies. Yeah,
right.
But there's a nobility to that. The writing wrongs and doing it through ridiculous
there
means.
You go.
Yeah,
there you go.
Ridiculous vans, ridiculous means.
I could go. I could go surreal and say Chuck Jones era Looney Tunes cartoons.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because that's my. You know what? Going back to a previous answer, as far as a role model, I didn't know it at the time, but Chuck Jones, specifically his, you know, all Looney Tunes, but especially Chuck Jones, really sort of formed my sense of humor and sarcasm and healthy disrespect for the status quo and authority.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
One. I'll say I'd love to drop
love
in
it.
On a
Chuck Jones,
Bugs Bunny cartoon.
And my third, I used to have dreams about this when I was a teenager, that I would like to have been one of the denizens of the swamp in MASH.
Oh, yeah, good one.
But I wouldn't be Winchester. You know, I would be Hawkeye's pal.
Right, you'd be Hawkeye's pal Storm.
Right, exactly.
There you go.
Dr. Storm.
Makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It's built in. It's ready to go. Absolutely. Okay, last one for you.
Last one for me. I am going to... Oh, man, I'm going to totally... find a loophole.
Yeah.
In this.
Okay. All right. I'm interested.
And I'm going to go in the Star Wars universe because of the Star Wars holiday special, which is on television, thereby opening up.
It. Judges, will we accept that? And I'm getting yes. Will we accept that? Star Wars via holiday special.
I don't want to be a Jedi Knight, but I want a fucking lightsaber.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much the biggest part of the appeal. There's a lot to like, but the lightsabers puts it over the top.
I firmly agree. Okay, what about, let's do three hobbies, and they could be not reality-based if there's something that strikes you. Three hobbies that you wish that you were, like, an expert at tomorrow.
Oh, wow. I'd go with like, robotics.
Ooh,
that would be so much fun. And making in general, like Adam Savage and the whole Mythbusters gang, the stuff that they do, I wish that I had Adam Savage's shop and could use those tools without killing myself.
And everyone around me.
Lathes are scary.
Yeah.
That is scary.
I just picture the smash cut to all of San Francisco burning down.
Giant mushroom cloud.
So
everything
true.
Cut into ribbons.
Related to that, I would say, while I don't have any particular passion for it, I would love to be really good at fixing and fixing up cars.
Yes. Yes.
Would love. Yes, like cars specifically. Like not so much maybe motorcycles or anything like that. But
Hot rodding?
Hot rodding.
I didn't know how close
that was. Not even hot rodding. I love a person who can look at a car when there's a problem and say, I know exactly what needs to happen here.
Yeah.
And then take a little bag of tools and fix a thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, run to the auto parts store and get the right thing the first time. and then have fixed their own car.
I know.
There was a time when I used to be able to do that kind of thing with my computer, very briefly around college and just after college age. And now at this point, I can point at the pretty lights and say, "Please make it work."
Right. have you guys been watching *Halting Cash Fire*?
No,
I have not. I've heard sort of mixed things about it.
I mean, it's not like a surprising show. You know what I mean? It's not like you're watching it thinking like, "What just happened?"
This is changing games here.
Yeah. But I'm such a sucker for that era and the music that they're using. Mm-hmm. And
I'm completely ignorant as to what this is.
Oh, it's an AMC show that takes place. It's about a group of people at a smaller company trying to preempt like IBM and all the big computer companies.
It's like a fictionalized Apple versus IBM kind of thing.
Yeah. And so it's in that era of the 80s. I mean, like, I'm still like, when the storytelling's good enough and the acting's good enough, which I think it is, those little like bonuses where like somebody has to go out and try to find a Cabbage Patch Kid, on the night before Christmas or whatever. Like, I'm at that age where I'm like, "Oh, this is great. I love seeing this." Yeah. I really enjoy it. But my friend and I were talking about it and determined that like, I really enjoy it. And if someone was like, "That show's garbage," I'd be like, "Yeah, maybe it is." Like, it's not a thing that I can stand. Like, I'm fiercely protective of.
Right. Right.
But I do really enjoy it. And I think you guys would like it. It is about like smart people trying to kind of,
Janet Varney recommends. Beat the system. Do it better.
I liked it. Okay, sorry. Okay, so we've got Fixing Cars for Paul and Robotics for Storm. I need two more from each of you.
This is going to sound douchey, but this is hard because generally when there's something like this that I'm interested in, I pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
So does it count like something that, if I had the time and an infinite amount of time to get good at
it,
art, like being able to draw the most kick-ass Jim Lee type comics, being able to, because you can picture in your head, but the gap between that and actually making it look like what you have in your head, that's like magic to me.
I feel exactly the same way. I don't know. That is a skill that I absolutely do not possess and am in such awe of. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, my older daughter is she's going to be an art major. She's going to be a senior this coming year, and she's going to go be an art major somewhere. And she just makes me mad. Like, she can just sort of sit down and throw a pencil at a piece of paper, and suddenly it's this wonderful sketch of whomever.
Yeah,
I hate that.
Stupid daughter.
Well, I think it's interesting when you're as a creative person or a person who's in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot and sort of doing what we do, then when there's somebody who has an artistic skill that still feels like magic, somehow, I don't know, that feels closer and more emotional of a feeling than if I were still, like working as a buyer for a store and did math all day. There's something about it that's like, I'm so close to that, but I absolutely can't do it at all.
Yep.
Yeah, I totally get it. Okay, what about you?
I'll bring it close to home. I really, really wish I was a person who could play piano, like anything on a piano. Like
You could just go take some lessons.
I mean,
together,
I can hammer through very basic stuff on the piano, and we'll do like two or three songs occasionally on stage, and it is absolutely at the limits of my ability. And I always wished I was that guy who would go into a party and there's a piano in the corner of the room and he just sort of nonchalantly plunks down and just starts playing and singing and is the life of the party, but not douchey about it. Just sort of, somebody name a song and play it.
Yeah, I know that really.
I wish I could be that guy.
I get it.
I envy that skill.
I feel like that about the harp. No, that's not true.
I do feel that way.
You know how those parties you go in and there's harp there and no one ever touches it. Well, I would be the one who would be like taking requests.
Janet, the arpist.
I do feel that way about the saxophone. And I had a roommate who had an alto sax, and for about a year, I sort of almost learned to play saxophone.
Uh-huh.
But much like the art, not to the point where you were fluid in saxophone.
Just enough to know how not good you were.
Right. And that, the gap between what's in your head and what you produce, just not being able to make it there.
Yeah, my brother was that guy. I mean, I'm the guy who went into music for a living, weirdly enough, but my older brother was the guy who could just pick up an instrument and teach himself to play it in a couple of months.
Amazing.
But I'm going to go for my third, if it's not saxophone.
Okay.
You said it can be sort of fictional.
Yeah.
Alchemy.
Great.
Would be so wonderful.
That's not fictional.
It's sort of
How
not.
Dare you?
What they do in chemistry.
Yeah.
Like if I had the time and adversity to that type of discipline,
yeah,
like going into that type of chemistry would be great. But going back to Pat Rothfuss's universe, this idea that there's sort of a rules-based alchemy, that it's not just, I'm going to wave my fingers and right. take a bay leaf and right. now I have a car.
Right.
But that there's actually this magic and wonder, things that could be produced that didn't exist before,
yeah,
would be nice. Great.
Well, that's the best part about just coming full circle about science fiction, right, is that it sort of offers up this notion that you could that magic can just be something we don't understand yet.
Right.
And that's I desperately clung to that when I wanted to have ESP when I was little.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
For sure, we're going to unlock this. It's just a matter of time and yeah. science, right, it's, everyone?
All I have to do is just concentrate right. hard enough.
No one else has concentrated as much as I'm concentrating yeah. right now, and that's why I'll move that ball across
the
table.
And the trick
table.
Is I just have to shape my thought the right way.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's sort of happening. Like they have the brain scans that it hooks up to a prosthesis or
oh, so you can get it. Yep.
It's sort of happening. It's not that automatic, I'm going to stare at that ball and it's going to float into the air. But who knows?
Who knows, guys?
Oh my God.
Okay, what's your third one?
Would be so great.
I know.
I'm
going to really
combine the piano thing and the magic thing, or the and the
magic
the alchemy.
Piano.
No, yeah. I was going to say the piano thing and the alchemy thing because I wish I was really good at magic, like sleight of hand magic.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Because it, again,
be really
that's
fun.
All about work ethic.
Yeah.
And
I know.
You know, there's no way to be naturally good at magic, naturally great at magic. You can have affinity for it, but the only way to do it is to put in the 100,000 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a great one, too. Great one. Okay, I guess I should move through these kind of faster. But okay, so next category will be, I gotta go, food that you wish you could just have from anywhere, from any
like
time. At any time. Could be a very specific thing that you just love and can't get enough of.
Oh.
Could be something that's really bad for you that you yourself might have an allergy to, she said. could be like a very specific thing from a very specific time and place.
I want a handful of gluten.
Just a fistful of shove it in my face.
Again, extraordinarily hard because I love food so much.
Yeah.
There's hardly
I'm glad
a thing.
I asked it.
If you wanted to start this podcast from the start and just talk about food, I would be there. But
I feel like I've had ones where people are like, huh. I don't know, sandwiches, I guess. Who are you?
Yeah,
who are you, sir?
They're bad people. They're fail people.
Yeah.
We don't need them around us.
I agree.
I will go with a very specific food.
Okay.
When I was about 6 or 7 years old, we had a local Chinese restaurant. And
that's exactly what I'm after.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I have such great memories of Chinese food. This might take a while. Because this
bonus episode,
I know, I love it.
I'll try to make it quick. I have to go back to not the dish I want, but the restaurant before, from when I was 3 or 4 years old.
Oh my!
It was a Chinese restaurant in a mall.
Okay.
And when we would show up, the smells would hit you that was unlike anything else anywhere else, because Chinese food was not so common. You know, it was common, but not super common in the 70s. And they would make a fuss over me. Versus my older sister.
Oh, there's a whole emotional thing going on here.
And also, my sister was very fussy. I was not.
Yes.
So it was like a double praise and a triple praise, an infinite praise going to the Chinese restaurant. Because I would try everything and everything tasted awesome. And these smiling strangers would praise me for this.
Oh, amazing.
So carry forward to when we moved and there was a local Chinese restaurant. And the first time... I want to go back and be able to eat for the first time Peking duck.
Wonderful.
It was this. And I'm starting to sort of become a vegetarian. And eventually I know I'm not going to even eat Peking duck anymore.
Okay.
I know this. But now I would. But to go back to that first taste where it hits the taste buds and there's the sweetness from the hoisin sauce, the doughy dough wrapper thing, and then sort of that the tart acid from the scallion that's in there, and then the fat from the duck and the crisp.
Yeah,
it just everything. It's like my head exploded. It was like in Ratatouille, the chef.
I love that. I love that sort of amendment to the idea of this too. Is like there are things that are just delicious and they're great and you would eat them all the time. But there's also that like God, if I could have that for the first time again, that's also really so specific.
Also, like seeing a movie for the first time, you cannot see that or feel that experience that for the first time.
That's going to be the next category, so put that in the back of your mind. I love it. I love it. Okay, let's keep. Let's stay with food for now.
Going along. Food. There was an Indian restaurant when my wife and I went to graduate school at University of Maryland, and there was an Indian restaurant near where we lived called Maharaja that was run by a woman named Neelam. And we had not ever eaten Indian food really before then, and somehow we got recommended to go there, and we went there and ended up becoming regulars because not only was the food incredibly delicious, but this woman who ran the restaurant was just the stereotypical Earth Mother, welcoming, beautiful, wonderful soul.
And as a college student, too, like, what a perfect time to sort of have that
destination.
She had a guru.
It was the first place I had always, I'd made a joke back in college with her. I always wanted to become a regular somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was our first place where we were regulars, and we would walk in, she would know what we wanted because we'd always get the same thing.
What would you get?
A chicken tikka masala.
Yeah.
And I would get usually either lamb vindaloo or there was like a korma like a lamb korma thing.
Should we just put the entire restaurant?
Put the Maharaja. And it extended to the point where when we had my oldest daughter, we lived down there until she was about 3 or 4. And when we would go there, as soon as we walked in, Neelam would just sort of sweep up my daughter and take her over to the kitchen. They had a window where you could look at her making stuff. So she'd just watch my daughter while we got to eat in peace.
I need a place like that here, I'm realizing.
Yeah. So
I feel like
sweet.
The closest thing I have is like the Whole Foods deli. Like, hey, you always get the same turkey.
Hey, Blondie, how you doing?
Yeah. Sandwiches, yeah.
Also, no one talks like that in California.
No, they don't. Fonzie's
hey,
not
Blondo.
Out here.
You're going to get the huge. No. Thank you, Glendale Whole Foods.
It's the Brooklyn of the West.
Everyone knows that, please. Okay, let's get
more food. For you, Storm, more food.
Oh, more food.
And don't
feel
like you have to take turns. If something jumps into your mind, you can shout out.
Sure.
I will say, and luckily I can get this on a regular basis, there's an ice cream shop called Thomas Sweet.
Ooh.
They have a few franchises dotted across the Northeast. And they are the original ice cream shop that made blend-ins. Like now you have Cold Stone where they mush things on. This place, it would be ice cream and the same kind of ingredients, candy and things like that. But it would be the ice cream and stuff would go into this kind of hopper, and then it would get smushed up against this big auger, like a huge drill bit kind of thing. And it would just essentially turn the ice cream into a soft serve with all of this stuff ground up
satisfying.
In it. And just the combination of being the first time I'd ever experienced that kind of ice cream. Plus, I have simple tastes, and their vanilla ice cream is still the best vanilla ice cream.
I know, right? When you have
anywhere.
A really lovely vanilla.
Like a French vanilla with the egg.
It is the most popular ice cream flavor, so it's not just vanilla.
No?
So I'm going to say a Thomas Sweet blend-in.
Great.
I'm going with New York Pizza.
Mm-hmm.
There are emotional components to that as well, having visited family, and again, that initial taste being connected with good things. But even in and of itself, I appreciate all pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly New Haven has its stake as being the original real American pizza. Chicago is a wonderful casserole. California,
for some reason, calls itself a pizza.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, the West Coast has its thing.
Right.
And
if you like kale on dough.
Which I do. I do like kale on dough.
Uh-huh,
I do.
Uh-huh.
And I appreciate the actual Italian pizza, which is the type I make at home. But the New York pizza is a taste, especially if it's from one of these places that still has the coal-fired ovens. I don't know why it's not like they sprinkle coal dust on the dough. But it just comes out in this crisp way. And I think it's the ingredients they get. It's like the pizza mafia says, no, the ingredients to make a truly tasty pizza will not leave the bounds of the five boroughs.
And also, isn't there like a theory about it's like it has to do with the water too, and like the
there is some of that.
Yeah.
There's terroir to bread. There really is.
Yeah.
And that there's a flavor that you can't get anywhere else than New York.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I get gluten-free pizza when I'm in New York, even, because I feel like I still have to have some version of that experience. Okay, what's your third one?
How
are we doing on time, Aristotle? I know that someone is in here at 3, so I just need to make sure.
There's lots to choose from, so I will take a turn on it, and I'll go with a historic food for me. I could do a pizza or I could do something else, which you choose, Janet.
I mean, I'm interested in pizza. Okay. Now that we're on the topic.
This is not because it is good, per se.
Good.
But I would love to be able to eat a Totino's party pizza. Because it was the pizza, like, we just always had them in the freezer.
Yeah.
And it's the taste of a lot of my childhood.
Sure.
Of,
that's how I feel about toaster strudel. I know it's garbage, but like, so many sleepover memories of like the squishing that vanilla icing onto the, trying to like distribute it, but also wishing you could just put the icing in your mouth correctly.
Oh, that was the Sophie's Choice of icing.
Oh God, it really was.
But it, you know, and of the frozen pizzas, it was the only one that was quote unquote good to me.
Right, right.
And I just love, you know, I'd come home from school or band or whatever, and I'd turn on the oven, and 20 minutes later, I had a kind of shitty pizza. And I just, the flavor, I can taste it right now.
I get it.
Pepperoni Totino's party pizza.
I get it. I knew it was going to be pepperoni.
My last is going to be one that Paul is also going to enthusiastically endorse.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure.
And it's a current obsession for both of us. Poutine, which the Canadian French gravy cheese fries, which again, much like the Peking duck, just hits all of the buttons and is so horrible for you.
I know.
But if you're talking about things that you just want to eat, that's got to be on my list.
We have, ever since we were first fed it, we are still amazed to this day that poutine is not huge in the States, because it is everything Americans love. It's French fries, it's gravy, and it's cheese.
But
and,
they don't like
and
the
also
French.
Meat. But they don't, it's a faggy sounding word or something.
Well, they're French Canadian, so even the French don't like the French Canadian.
There was a time when Storm, and I don't know, I never really knew how serious you were about this, but there was a time when Storm was talking about opening up sort of poutine franchises, but rebranding it as like monkey fries.
Monkey fries.
I get it.
Yeah. I was serious about it.
I don't know why they're called monkey fries, though.
Because monkeys are fun. Right? It's so fun, monkeys and fries.
There's nothing I like to picture
real
more.
Through line of reason.
And also because of monkey bread. Like, are you familiar with that? That's like where you take the Pillsbury croissant dough and cinnamon and sugar and you make a goopy pile.
Oh, no, I didn't know about that.
And you pull it apart. Look up monkey
bread. So, like, how monkeys throw shit at people.
Yeah, exactly, because
like
there's nothing you more want to think about when you're going to get something to eat than monkeys flinging shit.
That was serious.
It feels like, by the way, that there was a kind of a upsurge, at least there was in San Francisco, of, like, fries places that you could
there was the whole frites thing happening.
But it never really evolved into, like, a full-on poutine obsession.
And a lot of it, like, real poutine needs curds, specifically, and not a lot of people get the difference.
Curds,
fresh cheese curds.
Very important.
Which is different than just throwing some cheese on your fries. Yeah.
It melts a certain way, and also the gravy has to be right. And there's a lot of debate about what the proper gravy is. Even within Canada, there are factions about this place has that gravy, just like pizza, that people will slag on other people's poutine.
Damn, poutine is kind of a great word anyway.
It really is.
Okay, next category. Okay. I'm going to just take care of, I'm going to knock out the crush, the romance, the romantic interest of the Smash game for both of you. Three. It could be a fictional person. It could be a real person that you not. I mean, you can't say me.
Okay, well,
I'm so sweaty right now to even say that as a
numbers
joke.
Numbers two through
like a crime.
Four. Then.
I mean, if you must. No, but so it could be like, you know, it could for sure be like Princess Leia in the bikini in Star Wars, but it could also be, I think Emily Blunt's really fun, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Can be real or fictional.
My first is Betty from the Archie comics.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
I should be contrarian and say...
go ahead, Veronica.
Veronica?
No, except I was a Betty guy, too.
Yeah, we're Betty guys.
Wow. Okay. I gotta say... I'm going to lose all my nerd cred because I'm forgetting her name right now. The character that Christina Hendricks played in the Firefly episode.
Oh, I don't remember her name either.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm so ashamed that I cannot remember her name. But she was something to behold in both of those.
Wonderful.
And not just physically. I mean, she's obviously a physically ridiculously beautiful person.
Sure.
But
that was
just
a great, fiery
really
personality.
Great character.
Sure. No, I agree. It really popped. Like, that was a
Saffron.
Show that already... There
Saffron.
You go.
Oh, yeah.
Your nerd cred is intact. Fully intact.
Hey, me.
On a show that already popped and was different and unusual and great, which is why they're still, you'd think the show was still on based on like the nerd following, but and then to have a character that also pops off of that poppy show was like, huh.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, two more for each.
I will say Katharine Hepburn in any of the following movies. The Philadelphia Story, Bringing Up Baby, or The Lion in Winter.
Oh, great.
Going to the end of the career.
Why not?
She's great. Just a classy
broad. I love both Hepburns. They're so different from each other, but
yep.
Heather Graham in Swingers.
Oh, good pick. Mm-hmm. Good pull.
Yeah, really good pull. Great. Great. You're 1 degree of separation from that person. I didn't know. Okay. And three.
I could get really cheesy and say Korra from The Legend of Korra.
I love
it. Say that.
You know what?
She
would beat the snot out of you. She's a great and evolving character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, listen, I
well
wrote
played. Yeah, what the heck? Let's leave it there.
Great.
Let's leave it there.
Great.
Although I could just as easily say Katara from the original series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel, I don't feel creepy naming two teenage characters in cartoons
this can be
as a 44-year-old man.
I mean, it's okay.
And Twilight Sparkle.
Well, I'll go with one of my first crushes was Olivia Newton-John.
Nice.
Definitely.
In a pretty big bad way, actually.
You wanted to get physical.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, what was it? Was it Greece or Xanadu or just
it was her
music career?
Roller skating by in Xanadu. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good fantasy lady right there for sure.
Yep.
I do wish I spent more time on roller skates. Is that weird? But I really feel that way. And not rollerblades. Like, I mean, I don't have any. It doesn't extend to an interest in rollerblading.
Would you would actually want like the old school attach them to the bottom of my shoes roller skates?
Yeah, when I was in college, all of a sudden my friend Torin, who is truly an iconoclast in the sense that like he's just so well adjusted that he just truly doesn't care. Like one of those people where you're like, those people aren't real. He's for sure real. And not that weird at all. Like not a particularly weird guy. And beloved by everyone, just one of those people. And somehow he got his hands on some old roller skates and just started roller skating around Flagstaff. Like,
why not?
And I was really envious of that. I was like, God, I can't also roller skate around Flagstaff.
That sounds like the missing Spalding Gray monologue film, roller skating around Flagstaff.
Missing for a reason, maybe. Okay, I've got last three, and we got to motor through these. It's almost like a speed round.
All right, cool.
So next three is going to be type of transportation that is not a car that gets you around, fictitious or real.
Jetpack.
Is there even a question?
Does anybody ever not say jetpack?
Sometimes you're surprised.
You know what? I got to say, I wish I owned a Segway.
Oh, right? Sure.
I would love to motor around on a Segway. I'm sure 10 minutes of actually owning one would probably cure me of that. But
right.
Is this just what you like or something you would like?
Any.
Motorcycle.
Great.
Love of the motorcycle.
I would love an X-Wing.
Totally.
Because iconic from childhood.
Sure.
And I'm going to go with Colonial Viper from Battlestar Galactica. Wanted one of those so bad to show up at school in one of those.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Sure. You know,
and, I wanted so hard to have that helmet and that jacket.
And be like, hey.
Yeah.
You know Adam Savage has.
I know. I've worn it. I have a picture of myself in it on my phone right now.
But if you showed up like that, you would land and be like Space Fonzie.
You would.
Yeah.
You'd be all,
Also, I would watch Space Fonzie.
I want that to happen.
Note to everyone. Okay, next category. I'm moving fast. I put pressure on myself. Now I can't think of any of the ones I normally do. Let's go with person from history, three people from history that you're suddenly is your buddy.
Oh gosh, that's
male
hard.
Or female.
History is great.
Mm.
Buddy, that's a key word there.
Yeah, like
buddy.
Someone you'd actually want to hang out with, not necessarily
Abraham
like a
Lincoln.
Role model or okay, great.
Seems like a very interesting dude.
I'm going to break the rules again because this is going to be a duo.
Break them.
Is Gilbert and Sullivan specifically as portrayed in the movie Topsy Turvy.
I know. I tried to watch that movie again. I saw it in the theater. I remember thinking it was so long.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
And then I started watching and I was like, maybe
Topsy Turvy is the best movie ever made about theater, about the creative process, about collaboration, and about writing.
I'll watch it again because I do love Gilbert and Sullivan.
Oh, my God. It's so good. You're a flawed person if you don't decide you like this movie.
All right, I'm going to revisit it.
Not to overstate it.
I'm going to revisit it.
Mark Twain.
Great.
Yeah, good pick.
Love to hang out because he was also adventurous. He was not just writing stories.
Yeah, great one. Great one.
Yeah. I would take Harpo Marx.
Great.
Oh, interesting.
I read Harpo Speaks, his autobiography, and he just seemed like all the Marx brothers were interesting people, but he seems like the one I would most like to hang out with.
Yeah. You won. He won.
Yeah.
Okay. Three.
Sorry, it's the hang out with thing that is catching me. There are a lot of people I'd love to meet and talk to, but
buddy.
This is Buddy.
Yeah.
It's going to take me a little bit more to find Buddy.
I already did Harpo Marx. I was going to say just anybody from the Algonquin Round Table, because I'm fascinated with that era, and I wish I could go back and change one of my previous answers to say I wish I had a vacation home in the Algonquin in the 1920s. I will say... Did you say it could be fictional as well?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. I know I said in history.
History. Okay, history. No, that's fine.
So must be dead. Is that basically the...
No, could be alive.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
Let me say that. Yeah, could be alive. Just a real person.
Gotcha. Oh, you know what? You know who I wish was my buddy? Now I can't remember his name. I haven't eaten yet today, so I have a vocabulary of approximately 36 words right now. Stephen Fry.
Great. Hmm. Great, great, great.
I think he is just a fascinating person. And
he seems like a great person,
seems wonderful.
A good, solid person.
Just seems wonderful.
I think it would be fun to hang out with Bill Murray.
Great.
Good pick.
And that would
and
be
also,
fantastic.
And also, how smug would you be if Bill Murray was like, you're my guy?
Yeah.
Because he has discriminating taste.
Like if Bill Murray answered your phone calls.
Yes, yeah. You'd be like,
oh my
you
God.
Know what? I'll call him. He always takes my calls.
Yeah.
That'd be the most ensmuggening, not a real word.
It is now.
It is now. Done.
Okay, final category. And it's so hot in here, you guys.
Oh
so
my
thanks
God.
For putting up
no
with
problem.
That. That does not help the brain fire quickly, I know. How about... I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to say three albums that you guys, unbeknownst to anyone else, you actually played a large participation in. Could be that you sang in it, played on it, inspired it, recorded it, produced it, whatever. But three albums that you're like, you didn't know that I had a hand in Abbey Road or whatever. Right.
Well, we did have a hand in Abbey Road.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, God. Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Great.
Oh, then you wish you had. I got it.
Pink Floyd, The Wall. Sides 2 and 3 specifically.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
Great. Love them both.
The thing is, any Beatles. I'm going to cheat and say the Red Album that has the compilation of all of their early hits.
Oh, nice.
Clever.
I want a hand in
you
all of that.
You greedy bastard.
Yes,
I love it.
I'm Beatles greedy.
This will mean nothing to the vast majority of your listening audience, but Stan Kenton and his orchestra live at Redlands University.
Beautiful. Mm. It doesn't mean anything to me, but I appreciate and respect it.
It's symphonic big band, basically, like sort of bombastic.
Great.
Big band, and it was the style of music that our high school jazz band played, and
it was
my life was about that kind of music for 4 years. So.
Oh, that's great.
It's going over some of the same territory, but Wish You Were Here, Pink Floyd, is a very meaningful album to me.
Mm-hmm. And Peter Gabriel's So.
Oh, I'm right there with you.
Which was also the first CD I ever purchased
me
when
too.
I got a CD player.
Me too. That was like the soundtrack to several years of my life, it feels like. Oh my God, it's so good.
I was going to say there's not a clunker on that album, but there's a couple of weak links near the end.
Like what?
This is the picture isn't very... I'm not big on this is the picture. Laurie Anderson is doing her Laurie Anderson thing, and that's fine, but it just doesn't fit on that album.
I know. I don't disagree with that. Okay. This is tricky because usually only one.
Yeah,
and
now you got to do two of us.
But I'm going to just do... I think I'm going to do the same thing for both of you. Then I can just do a quick cross off. So
cool.
This will be interesting because it's basically just going to be whoever says stop first.
Stop.
All right. One, two, three, four. Okay. Aristotle, could you pause the recording for a second? I'm just going to knock this out really quick.
as an app form.
Okay, I got it. I know, Mash App. Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Great idea.
Mash at home.
That's a thing I won't do. that is a wonderful idea. Okay, so first off, I'm going to congratulate you both on your on how you get around.
Hmm.
Because, Storm, you have a Colonial Viper.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be outdone, you have an X-Wing.
Of course I do.
Yeah. Matching you.
So, well done for both of you. A couple of space boys. I want to also congratulate you on your wonderful eating choices. Whenever you want, your first taste of Peking duck.
I am so glad.
Yeah.
I had the telekinesis going.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. He actually made
process.
It happen here.
I did. I moved reality.
I now am a believer.
Mm-hmm.
I now am a believer. It's just science, guys. It's just science. which means, of course, that you get to also have your wonderful experience at Maharaja.
Oh, of course.
Your chicken tikka masala et al. I want to congratulate you on your ability to jump into Looney Tunes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Specifically, Chuck's Looney Tunes.
I promise not to abuse this power.
And speaking of great power and great responsibility, the A-Team. You're
going
to be writing wrongs.
I'm going to be a noble person.
I know you do. I know that you do love it when a plan comes together, Storm.
I certainly do.
This is appropriate.
But I ain't getting on that plane.
You ain't getting on that plane.
I ain't getting on that plane.
Okay. Listen, amongst your many, many skills that you guys already have, I want to congratulate you on your ability to work with robotics.
Thank you.
I've built you a robot.
I didn't want to spoil the surprise.
I love a good robot gift. And then you tooling around in the car, fixing cars right and left. Now that you drive an X-Wing, but...
I got to drive a car to my X-Wing
parking
spot.
That's right.
X-Wing
stuff,
stable.
Guys.
Yes.
You can also disappear into the world of Downton Abbey, which also might be a little bit Algonquin because it's both the 20s.
Yeah, there we
right?
go. I can
so
hop. Yeah,
like
I can totally hop.
A little bit of a back and forth
across
on that.
The pond, as they say.
And you know that grants you full access to the world of Happy Days.
Oh, that's so awesome! This is the perfect.
This
world.
Is really working.
We're living
going
in the perfect
well.
World.
This is going very well.
I'm now officially believing that this is a supernatural game.
It is
it's
supernatural.
All picking almost.
Oh,
all
by the way,
right
you both
ones.
Have apartments in those places. So the Happy Days, you call your apartment's like above Mills slash.
No, your apartment is above.
Above
the Cunningham's
okay, there you go. Okay, so you got the apartment.
Yeah.
And then your apartment is also somehow in the 20s. I would
have a penthouse suite in the Algonquin.
Perfect.
There
perfect, perfect, perfect. Okay. What do I have left? I want to... probably having a great time talking about... you know, just nice to tell stories about the production of some of the most iconic albums ever produced, including The Wall. So
of course.
Well done in your participation on that.
Thank you.
And Goodbye, Elbeck Road.
Some of my best work. Thank you.
If not your best.
Maybe.
Is that fair to say?
Maybe.
And then appreciated, I'm sure, by your friends and peers, Gilbert and Sullivan and Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
You're like,
that
yes,
would be the
that
best.
Is what
that's
we would
right.
get.
That would be the greatest crime-fighting team ever.
Clever, charming and clever, and rhyme fighty. And then your beautiful companions through this marvelous, strange life you have. Betty from Archie.
I live in the dream.
And Saffron from Firefly.
Ooh. She's going to double cross me and steal my X-Wing.
Yeah. Yeah, she is.
But I can't help but love her. I cannot help but love her.
Betty would never steal my Colonial Viper.
That's right. You're very safe, question mark. Guys, that'll do it. That will do it for Mash. You have a new album coming out.
It's out.
It's out.
It's out digitally.
I'm an asshole.
You're the worst. It's called
Ball
Pit.
That's the name of the show that I'm on that's airing on FX. So thanks for the accidental pitch.
Who says it was accidental?
God, we're good.
Buzz marketing, guys.
Buzz.
It's called Ball Pit. It is out digitally now. All places you can get digital music things.
Great. Get on board, guys. We will be, this comes out while we are at Comic-Con, so hopefully we'll see some of you there.
Yay.
Great.
And thanks again for doing the podcast.
Thank you. This was super fun.
Bye. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.